Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Enfant Terrible, In Silico, and Stowaway. I want to do accents going forward.
Okay, by me.
Okay. just wanted to put that down.
Yep.
All right.
Well, we've got three films today, none of which actually are taking accents, but we can do our vocal accents if we want. So let me say our first film for today is called Enfant Terrible, which is my terrible French accent at work there. But Enfant Terrible is actually a movie which is all about Germany in a way. That is to say, it has a German subject. Enfant Terrible is a biopic of the very, very amazing and great German film director Rainer Werner Fassbinder. And Fassbinder, for anybody who doesn't know about him, was a phenomenal movie maker whose career flourished mainly in the 1970s. He started in the theater, and then he moved over to film in the late 1960s. And over the course of his career, which didn't go for that many years, he directed, officially the number is something, let's just say more than 40 films. And that's movies that he directed almost entirely. He wrote them as well. Many of them he starred in as well. And at the same time, he was producing movies for other directors and acting in movies for other directors. He had an absolutely phenomenal career, unbelievably productive, which ended when he was in his middle 1930s, because a lot of this superhuman activity was fueled by drugs, and drugs killed him, again, when he was in his middle 30s. So in a way, an amazing story, in a way, a tragic story. But anyway, he had a phenomenal career. He was also, by all accounts, I met him once or twice and interviewed him once, and he was perfectly, okay. But by all accounts, he was practically an impossible person to get along with. He was really obnoxious in all kinds of ways. So Enfant Terrible is a kind of a biopic, which is to say it takes a look at Fassbinder during some of the peak years of his movie-making career, and it shows his really obnoxious, irritable, irritating behavior, and also gives some little bit of a sense of his tremendous talent as a filmmaker and a writer and all of these things. So that's what it is. If you're interested in Fassbinder, it's a movie you should not miss. If you've never heard of Fassbinder, it's a movie that would maybe teach you a little bit about him. The movie was directed by Oskar Roller, a German filmmaker, and it gives an interesting little portrait of some of the times when Fassbinder was at his peak activities. Interesting things about Enfant Terrible. I found it a very interesting movie to watch because I'm very interested in Fassbinder. It's not a very appealing movie. It's very stylized. A lot of the sets and backgrounds and things are painted or obviously sets and backgrounds, not real places. Sometimes it's not quite clear whether we're seeing something that Fassbinder is filming for one of his own generally very low-budget movies or whether it's something in the movie that we're watching about Fassbinder. And that ambiguity from time to time is a little bit interesting. Something I had a little bit more problem with is that the guy who plays Fassbinder in the movie, a guy named Oliver Masucci, he looks sort of like Fassbinder, but he kept striking me as, again, Fassbinder starred in a lot of his own movies, so it's really, one really knows what he looks like. I just found Masucci a little bit too large looking for Fassbinder. I was never quite convinced it was really Fassbinder. The same goes for some of the people who play some of Fassbinder's actors within this movie. Other odd little things about the film. Sometimes it sort of seems to be being coy about the titles of some of Fassbinder's films. For example, Fassbinder made a movie called Whitey, which for some reason in this film is called Blackie. It's a little bit odd in some respects. But overall, by the way, also one of Fassbinder's, maybe the sort of magnum opus of his career, was a movie he made called Berlin Alexanderplatz, which was originally made as a TV miniseries, something like 14 hours long. And it's not even mentioned in this movie, which I thought was very, very peculiar. But I'm sort of talking about some of the nits that I'm picking with Enfant Terrible. I found it a very interesting movie to watch. Again, if you're interested in Fassbender, it is a must-see. And if you're not interested in Fassbender or maybe have never heard of him, then, you know, check it out. It'll give you a little insight into the life of this very great director and very obnoxious person. And some of the things that are in it that seem most outrageous really happened in real life. And so it's kind of interesting to watch in those ways. I had a good time watching it, even though, again, I don't think it's any sort of a great film. Our second film for today, Jill, called In Silico, is not a sort of fictionalized account of something real. It is a real documentary written and directed by Noah Hutton. And it's an interesting movie. The title In Silico refers to a neuroscience project set up by a leading neuroscientist named Henry Markham, who announced some years ago his ambition to make a completely computerized model of the human brain. That's what he was going to do. And he called this the Blue Brain Project. Later on, it got its name changed to the Human Brain Project. And it was started way back around, I think, around 2010 is when it really got underway. And along the way, Markham got this huge bit of funding from the European Commission, almost $1.5 billion to fund this thing. So a very, very ambitious project. And this young filmmaker who kind of really looked up, hero worshipped Markram, Noah Hutton, he decided this is really interesting. They've got a timeline on this. They're going to do this all in 10 years. And that would be fascinating to follow the whole thing and make a movie about this project and how it goes and the things that develop along the way. And by the end, ideally, the project will have accomplished its goal and we will have made a movie about all this. Well, big surprise. The timeline got sort of thrown out the window along the way. And in fact, to this day, as I understand it, they have not succeeded in making this full complete model of the human brain on supercomputers. In fact, they haven't even quite completed the mouse brain part of the project. So there's a long way to go in this. And that's what's fascinating about this movie In Silico, is that it starts out with this sort of very starry-eyed view of the scientist Henry Markham and his gigantic project. And it really is a fascinating project and a hugely important project. But it turns in a different direction as it goes along because it becomes clear that the project isn't going quite the way Markham had hoped. And the filmmaker is documenting all of this and kind of becoming more realistic about Markham and about the project. There's nothing debunking about this. It still looks up to the project and up to Markham as being remarkable phenomena in the world. But it's just kind of interesting that the movie kind of becomes more realistic about the prospects of this whole thing as it goes along. So it's really, really interesting. And then other things happen along the way, which is that other scientists. First of all, the filmmaker, Noah Hutton, starts to interview scientists who are critical of Markham and his project and who just feel it's misguided or it's never going to accomplish its goal or it really should be going in another direction altogether, and this is not the way neuroscience should be done. And then Markram and his crew become very critical of Hutton for interviewing these other critical scientists, and so you get a little bit of feuding going on that way. At one point, a whole bunch of neuroscientists wrote and published an open letter against Markram and his project, which also becomes a part of this film. So really, ultimately, the movie becomes, it certainly is very much about Markram and his huge, gigantic project and about the goals of it and about the problems that rise up along the way and about the huge challenges of doing interdisciplinary science like this. But it's also very much about the squabbles that develop along the way. And disagreements and the ways that scientists can kind of turn on each other and be critical of each other, sometimes in very nice, polite, lofty academic ways, and sometimes in ways that are not quite so nice and polite and lofty and academic. So it's just a very, very interesting human movie, as well as being a very interesting documentary about a fascinating neuroscientific project. I do have to say that the movie is well under an hour and a half long. And at a time when so many movies are so much longer than they really ought to be, it's nice to encounter a nice, tidy, economical movie like this. But it's really not long enough or large enough to really capture its subject in all of its complexity and its fascinating various different areas. So here was a case where I wish the movie had been even a bit longer. On the other hand, for what it is, the movie is very, very interesting. Again, most movies about scientific projects are about that, the scientific project and how it goes and the challenges and what they accomplished and what they discovered. And all of that is in this movie, although the project remains far from complete now. But it's also very much about the kind of squabbles that develop. And it's about the filmmaker's own evolving view of the subject of his own film. So I just found the movie very, very interesting and very fun to watch. And it's not only a very interesting science movie, it's a very interesting human movie. So I really do recommend In Silico. It's one of the better documentaries that I've seen in recent time. And our final movie for today, Jill, is a movie called Stowaway. And it is now science fiction. So we're out of the science documentary field into the science fiction field. And this is science fiction in all ways. It was directed and co-written by Joe Penna. And it's a very, very nicely done movie and a very interesting movie for a science fiction film. Because I'm going to use this word again. It's a very human movie. It has its special effects and it all takes place in outer space and all of that. But it has a very small cast, just a few characters on this spaceship. And that's all the people that we see or even hear from along the way. A fascinating little quirk of this movie is that a lot of these astronauts, while they're on their spaceship far away from Earth, are talking with people back at Mission Control and all this, but we don't really get to hear what the people are saying over the radio communications and so forth. We just hear these little muffled little sounds. So we're not only seeing only the handful of people who are on the spacecraft, but they're pretty much all we're even hearing during the course of the movie. So here's the movie about the great expansiveness of outer space, and yet we have a very small cast, and the focus is completely on these people in this ship. So it's really, really interesting. It goes against the grain of so much science fiction, which tends to be so large and expansive and effects-driven. This is very much an actor-driven and story-driven and personality-driven story. So what's it about? It's very similar to a really, really famous short story of the 1950s, which I remember reading when I was a kid or maybe an adolescent and being very impressed by. I remembered it all these years. The story I'm thinking of is called The Cold Equations. And the basic premise of it is you have these people on this spaceship and they're way in the middle of outer space and there's no way they can return to Earth and they're on a mission. And it turns out there's a stowaway aboard. And the reason that that makes a huge difference to all concerned is that there is only just so much oxygen on this ship. And it's just enough oxygen for the handful of people who are supposed to be on the ship. And now there is an extra person, so what is going to happen? And as the short story's title suggests, The Cold Equations, there's just no way that people can get out of this in some graceful, nice ending for everybody. Somebody is going to have to leave the ship, or else they're all going to die. And that's what that story is about. So this movie is not exactly based on that story, although the story has been adapted more than once in various media. The movie goes off in different directions, but that's the basic idea of it. We have, oh, this is just so Hollywood. We have the, even though this is a German-American co-production, we have the racially, ethnically balanced crew played by Daniel Day-Kim and Anna Kendrick and Toni Collette. And then it turns out that the stowaway is a black man played by Shamir Anderson. And so there they are, and they're out there in the middle of space, and the three crew members are getting along just fine, and they're on the big mission and they're on their way and it's all going to happen. And then pretty early in the movie, they discover the stowaway and okay, we're all going to see what we can do here and we're going to make this work and everything's going to be fine. And then it turns out that the oxygen supply is not as reliable or exactly really what they thought it was. And so the movie certainly has adventure scenes in it. It's not just people sitting around the cabin and stewing about it. There's adventure scenes. There turns out to be some oxygen in a very, very faraway part of the craft. So there's this harrowing spacewalk where they have to go along this long, long sort of extended pole that goes out into space, and is somebody going to fall off and disappear into space? So there's definite action and adventure in it in that way, but it's kind of intimate action and adventure. Again, everything very focused on the human beings, the human bodies, the human personalities who are involved. The movie is really well acted. Anna Kendrick, Daniel Day-Kim, and Shamir Anderson, Toni Collette are all really, really good. The special effects are fine, but never showy or ostentatious. And the movie, this is a Netflix film, and that's the way a lot of people are going to be seeing it, certainly in the United States. And I think it's a movie that works very nicely on the home screen. I don't think it's a movie that demands to be seen on a great big screen in a movie theater. So I really enjoyed Stowaway. I think it's one of the better science fiction movies in a very long time. And what impressed me about it most of all was that human dimension to it. I really like the way it focused on people rather than effects. So that is my somewhat scientific and somewhat fictional story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Enfant Terrible, In Silico, and Stowaway.